You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, Saturday, August 24th. Coming up after this segment, the second segment of the second hour, we're going to welcome Colin Flaherty of WorldNet Daily fame. His book, White Girl Bleed a Lot, was an Amazon bestseller all the way up to number one on the Amazon charts. And so we're very much looking forward to welcoming Colin Flaherty to the Political Cesspool for his debut interview on our award-winning broadcast. Of course, another person made her own debut interview on the Political Cesspool. That was Sydney Leathers. We spent the entire first hour talking about that. Keith Alexander, my co-host and friend, is here in the studio now. He's going to provide a few parting shots on that. Then we're going to get into Colin, and then for the rest of the program, we're going to be back to plowing our normal fields, toiling in the vineyards, if you will. But Keith, you wanted to provide a few comments, maybe an angle on that interview and the story itself, Sydney Leathers, Anthony Weiner, that Sam and I didn't quite get to.
Yes, it was really fascinating and thought-provoking to hear you and Sam and Sydney's herself in the interview. Sydney, I think the word that Sam and you were trying to capture, you know, she wasn't classy, I don't think. She wasn't, but what she was poised. She was very poised and very articulate. And quite frankly, I don't think you can make a silk purse into a sow's ear into a silk purse in that regard. She apparently is smart. What I would liken her to is the 9th District of Tennessee Congressman Steve Cohen's supposed daughter, love child, who was actually the daughter of a Jewish oil man named John Prince, I believe that's his name, down in the Houston area. And basically, Prince and Cohen were friends. Cohen needed what they call a beard in the gay community. Everybody, it's an open secret in Memphis that everybody suspects that Steve Cohen, who has never been married and is in his 60s, is a homosexual. And he's elected in a majority, a large majority black district. And as most people who are racial realists, like the people on this show, realize, blacks are probably the most anti-gay group there is. So how does this guy manage to do it? Well, okay, that he manages to do it by you know, pretending that he has a love child, which endears him to his electorate. Well, what was in it for the girl? The girl wanted a swimsuit model career. And she could think of, you know, it apparently was a match made in heaven to be able to go to all these influential power parties in Washington, D.C., like the Obamas' Christmas party, and be photographed and to get all of this buzz surrounding her. I think Sydney Leathers was doing the same thing. She's apparently what they call a puma. She's a young woman that likes older men. At least that's part of it. But of course, there's a lot more than that here. Here is the situation. I think this is, in a larger cultural context, a perfect example of what Roger Devlin, who has been on our show and is one of our favorite authors on male-female relationships, what he captured in an excellent essay that I would recommend anyone read if they haven't read it. It's called Sexual Power in Utopia. Devlin's thesis in that probably 40 to 50 page work is this: monogamy has been decimated by liberalism. Things like no-fault divorce, things like feminism, things like women's rights and equal pay for equal work, things like this, have basically undermined the traditional monogamy that we have in America also the anti-Christian animus of liberalism has also had an effect. And he said that when monogamy passes, what takes its place? It's not polygamy, as some people thought it would be. It's not bigamy. He says what replaces it is hypergamy, which is basically the mating habits of a baboon pack. What happens is women compete to mate at the top with the alpha male. And the alpha male in, for example, modern Western society is not the caveman that, kills the most animals or something like it was in Neolithic times. It's the big prestige player, the guy that has bongo bucks and whatnot. Well, that's apparently what Wiener was. And Sidney Leathers was falling into the hypergamous type of relationship that is, in hypergamy, women want to mate at the top. They don't mate with the betas, the omega males, the lambda males, all these other lesser types. And the males in a baboon pack do their best to be number one. They're competing with each other to become the alpha male. Well, Devlin's point, if you read the entire article, is that hypergamy serves the interests of women very badly, and it ends badly for these women most of the time, and you wind up with single mothers who have to turn to the government as the support of last resort to raise their children. They're unhappy, they're frazzled, and basically societal happiness goes down several notches because of the switch from monogamy to hypergamy. Monogamy is very democratic. There's a man for every woman, a woman for every man. Well, what about Sidney Leathers? Well, Sidney Leathers may be buoyant, she may be poised, but God will not be mocked. She now has had sex with a guy that has tested out HIV positive, which means that there's a very good likelihood that she has contracted AIDS as a result of her little adventure walking on the wild side. And God is not mocked. As a result, you know, it's just like the AIDS epidemic with homosexuals. You know, it really irritates a lot of people that lobby for homosexual rights to think that somehow there is some inherent punishment for behaving in a way that God in the Bible has clearly said is not only a sin, but, you know, an abomination, which is kind of like a supersized sin. But there it is. You know, you have AIDS, and most AIDS is spread through homosexual activity. Now we're seeing Sidney Leathers walking on the wild side, disregarding biblical teachings on, sexual relationships between men and women. And lo and behold, she is now exposed to AIDS and very likely could have AIDS. And I understand that she hasn't been giving interviews since she found out about this. So it apparently has really hit her hard. So that's what, you know, all this, the Sidney Leathers tale is a morality play on the truth of Roger Devlin's sexual power and utopia thesis of the dangers of hypergamy. Going for the alpha male is a bad deal for most women, and it's turned out to be a bad deal for Sidney Leathers.
Thank you, Keith, for your contributions on that topic, which we've been covering the entire show to this point, but enough of that. On to Colin Flaherty. You're going to enjoy this, folks. Stay tuned.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's indeed my esteemed honor to welcome to the program for the first time a man whose work I've been following for a long, long time. Colin Flaherty is an award-winning reporter and author of White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America and How the Media Ignore It. It's a best-selling book that peaked at number one on Amazon.com. And, of course, Colin is also equally well-known for his intrepid reporting for WorldNet Daily. I say this, and I truly mean it. Colin has become the foremost journalist displaying the courage of his convictions to go out and speak with truth and clarity on the taboo issue of black-on-white racial violence. Colin, welcome to the political cesspool.
It is an honor to be here.
Colin, why did you decide to dedicate so much of your work to, again, the seemingly taboo issue? I certainly doubt that it was for career advancement opportunities or to endear yourself with your peers in the media.
Well, I always liked writing tough stories that nobody else would write. That's in my history in journalism. I've won a lot of awards for doing just that. And so I started seeing all these funny newspaper stories. The newspaper reporters were calling these things flash mobs about teenagers having a little fun on the streets of Philadelphia. And, you know, maybe somebody got hurt. Who cared? Then I looked at the videotapes. And I saw 1,000 people running, black people running down the streets of Philadelphia, pulling people out of cars, going into restaurants, stealing purses, cell phones, destroying property, you know, turning over cars. It was unbelievably violent, and it kept happening. And I kept asking other reporters, I said, that looks like a race riot to me. And they said, no, Colin, race has nothing to do with that. Now, you know, we live in the most race-conscious country in the world. Every day we pick up a newspaper and read about the Black Caucus, black colleges, black labor unions. Many of these stories are written by members of the National Association of Black Journalists. And so, you know, I kept asking, what's up with all this violence that's exclusively black mobs? And they would look at me and say, Colin, we're colorblind. We don't know. So I thought, there's a story there.
Well, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong.
if there was this epidemic of white-on-black violence for no other reason than the color of skin, I would be the first to condemn it. But when the races are inversed, you cannot talk about it. In fact, those of us who do in the mainstream media receive sniper fire constantly. People like me for our part on the radio, certainly you, Colin, my friend Pat Buchanan, you know, he can't even go back on NBC anymore because he dared to mention in his last book, Suicide of a Superpower, some of the statistics regarding race and crime. White people don't touch this issue. A few of us do. White people don't touch it in general because they don't want to be called a racist. Now, racist is actually one of the more kind terms that's been bestowed upon me by my detractors. It's completely completely unfounded, of course, but whites don't want to be called a dirty name, so they're going to completely bury their heads in the sand like the ostrich and just let this thing ride. But why, and we talked about this on the phone, Colin, a couple of days ago, why don't so-called black leaders do this? You know, if I was Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton and I saw this occurring, and of course, blacks are by far the most victimized by black violence. You know, of course, when there's, you know, issues of racial animus, they just become glossed over as teens or youths or whatever. But why aren't people in the black community speaking out about this?
You know, I don't know. I don't, you know, when I set out to, when I wrote this book, I set out to write a mainstream book. And so here's how I decided to do it. And this is kind of like rules that I think anybody could use to talk about race to keep themselves out of trouble. One, no generalizations. Two, no stereotypes. Three, no apologies. I don't do causes. I don't do solutions. So I don't do the big overarching theories. I don't try to figure out what's in Al Sharpton's mind, why he's saying this or saying that. My book is just one horrific example of racial violence after another. Fact, 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 fact. So I don't do the theories. When we have this mountain of facts, why do we have to theorize and use hypothetical situations? It's like, we don't have to do that.
Well, you are a classic journalist. Who, what, where, when, and why? Just the facts, ma'am. And I want to tell you, folks, if you haven't been turned on to the work of Colin Flaherty, you got to go to WorldNet Daily and read it. And I salute and give eternal credit to Joe Farah for allowing you the venue and the form that he's given you. Let's talk about some of your recent work, Colin. You know, the media went to such a great extent to paint as a national news story, my God, it's the biggest news story of the year, the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin incident in which they tried to cast the Hispanic George Zimmerman. And listen, I'm on the side of the facts here and the side of justice. He was using in self-defense, in my opinion, in that situation, and I think justice was served there. But they tried to cast that as a white-on-black incident of violence or a hate crime, if you will. You talk about incidents that happen every day that are far more cut and dry than that case, and the media completely ignores it. Give us an example of just some of the incidents in the last few days or weeks that you've covered that should be national news story if the Zimmerman and Martin story was.
Okay, last night. This hasn't made the papers yet. Maybe a little in Chicago, but I'm writing about it. Even as I picked up the phone, I was writing about it. Last night in Chicago, a Chicago police officer was hit on the head with a baseball bat. If you followed the Chicago Tribune account, all you would know is that guy got hit on the head while trying to break up a fight. But if you talk to the cops who patrol that area, and if you look at the cop blog out there, Second City Cop, you could tell there was a lot of people there. It was a case of black mob violence. And anybody who follows my reporting on Chicago knows that there's this violence against the police is a regular and dangerous occurrence. So that happened last night. You know, the big thing that happened that everybody got everybody's attention was just a couple days ago, right? In Oklahoma.
Right, sure.
But the message of Oklahoma to me is this. Oklahoma was horrific. But it was not unique. It was not even rare. Okay, look what happened a day or two after Oklahoma. The 88-year-old veteran in Spokane beat to death. What about a couple days before that in Memphis? David Santucci, a 27-year-old nurse, killed on the streets of Memphis. What about a couple days before that in St. Paul, Minnesota? Ray Wistrand, almost killed on the streets of St. Paul by a mob of 50 to 100 black people. This list, what about Pat Metheny? Just died a couple days ago. He was attacked. He was beaten into a coma by a black mob. This goes on and on. And this list goes on and on. These examples of black mob violence in my book are big and small, fatal, not fatal, cities big and cities small. The real message to me of the book now is it's not just Boston, Chicago, New York, Baltimore, Philly, Washington, D.C. It's Peoria, Illinois. It's Springfield, Missouri. It's Indianapolis. It's Milwaukee. It's Portland. It's Seattle. It's happening a lot of places, and all the editors, all the police chiefs are playing by the same playbook. They are terrified that their town will become known as a center of racial violence.
You know, you mentioned a plethora of examples just then of any number of dozens or even hundreds we could draw from in recent times. As you mentioned, it's a daily occurrence, and it doesn't even happen just once a day. It's a daily occurrence that happens multiple times.
Can I tell your readers how to listeners? Can I tell our listeners how they can follow along, follow the bouncing ball? Because I can't report all the stuff that happens.
Please do.
Okay, so if anybody uses Google News Alerts or Twitter, I was using them a lot, and I was getting some. That's how I get my tips. I get them from a lot of places. Then I put in a lot of different terms in. You have to put the euphemisms in, right? Like unruly teenager. I put in the term large fights. Ever since I put that term in, I've been getting a tsunami of information about black mob violence daily.
Colin, hold on right there, my friend. We got to take a break. We got one more segment with you after these words from our sponsors, and we're going to let people know how to support your work and get your book. Stay tuned, everybody.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cofcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Folks, we have one more segment with the great Colin Flaherty. Be sure to follow his work at WorldNet Daily. And, of course, we want you to go to Amazon.com and get the book, White Girl Bleed a Lot. We're going to give Colin an opportunity in a few minutes to plug his contact and all that great information a little bit further. Colin, before the break, you were giving us some tips on how we can know whether or not a news story is being suppressed with regards to the racial animus of it, and please continue along that line of thinking.
Oh, anyway, so just plug in the word large fights into your Google News alerts and your Twitter stream, where you can pick up anybody who uses that expression on the news or on Twitter. And you will be flooded with examples of large fights all over the country, and the overwhelming majority of these large fights involve black mob violence.
The story you mentioned a moment ago of the World War II veteran, I believe he was 88 years old in Washington State. He survived the horrific Battle of Okinawa, right? But he didn't survive diversity. You know, and I tell you, Colin, if this was a story in which the races were reversed, it's guaranteed to be national news. And again, we know that because of the media manufactured Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman race scandal, in which Zimmerman was portrayed as a white man. You know, yeah, he was part white. So is the president, but they certainly don't refer to Obama as white. You mentioned all of these stories, though, would have been national news if the roles were reversed. Oklahoma, Memphis, Minnesota, so on and so forth. So many you can't even count them. But yet, here's Paula Deen, and this is a great comparison and contrast, I believe. Look, no one here advocates using crude language or being rude or impolite or tacky. Paula Deen said the N-word 30 years ago after she was held at gunpoint by a black man, an African-American. And that's national news for a month, but none of these stories scratch local news? What's going on here, Colin?
Here's what's going on. Virulent black racism is the new normal. And you can tell that. I mean, if you looked at the Trayvon trial and you followed the Twitter postings or the Facebook postings, you saw the most vicious, ugly, and vile things being said about white people, what they're going to do to Mr. Zimmerman. Or if you just plug in the most vile racist terms you can imagine into your Twitter or into your news alerts, you'll see similar findings. What about this Department of Homeland Security employee that everybody's been freaking out about over the last week? A guy whose one of his jobs is acquiring weapons by day. By night, he makes these wacky videotapes.
Right.
I mean, I can't even describe how crazy these videos are. But and what about the Twitter stream and the Facebook pages of the kids who were involved in Oklahoma? Same thing, filled with vile, racist material, and not just once in a while. It's full of it. You know, out of 2,500 tweets, many of the tweets were very race conscious or full of references to drugs and violence. So, you know, racial vile black racism is the new normal, and nobody seems to really care about it. But you know what? All we can do is just say it's happening.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we certainly haven't reached critical mass by any means, and this is a point that I bring out week after week. But I do believe that there is growing momentum here. What you see happening, of course, with your work, and there's others that are beginning to speak out in a very professional and polished way. I mean, this is a very serious issue. And as Americans and as adults, we should be able to have a debate in the court of public opinion and be able to tolerate, you know, that's what the left's all about, right? You know, tolerance and openness and an exchange of ideas. We should be able to talk about these issues without being shouted down as a supremacist or racist or whatever.
I'm not worried about them because the stuff I do isn't debatable. All my stuff's on, you know, 10 years ago it might have been, but now it's all on videotape. So what are we going to debate? Are we going to debate how many people? Are we going to debate whether there was 800 people there or 850? Are we going to debate, you know, I mean, it's crazy. There's nothing to debate anymore. So here's the thing. It's like, I'm not really that interested in, like, the interesting part of this discussion now is not the good and the bad. It's the true and the false. And we just got to keep saying what is true. And no one can resist that.
As was said, I believe, a few years ago, the truth is no defense when it comes to absolving ourselves from the false accusations that may be levied our way. Colin, my co-host Keith Alexander has a question for you. He's been sitting by patiently as we've conducted this discussion. But before we toss it over to Keith, I know we only have a couple of minutes remaining with you. I want to be sure to first offer you the opportunity to let people know where they can learn more about your work and, of course, buy the book.
Easy to find. WhiteGirlBleedALot.com, WhiteGirlBleedALot on Amazon. Easy to find.
All right, and with that being said, Keith, fire away.
Colin, Keith Alexander, good to talk with you, sir.
Hey, thanks.
Let me tell you, I think that the main mechanism to prevent people from talking about racial reality, like the racial reality that you bring up regarding black-on-white crime, is a mechanism known as political correctness. And I don't think that political correctness is just good manners, and I don't believe it has grown as a happenstance or a coincidence. I think that it is a leftist strategy that has been very purposefully developed and is intended to basically work like William Lind, who is who's been a guest on our show before. You may be familiar with him. He calls political correctness cultural AIDS because he says, just like AIDS, it disables the immune system of white people to identify and defend themselves against attacks that can prove deadly. Apparently, we can't observe a racial animus or acknowledge that we are the victims of racial animus, and that makes us unique among all other racial and demographic categories. How do you see the interplay of political correctness with the refusal of the mainstream media to, you know, tell the truth about these racially motivated crimes against whites?
Look, there's no doubt that there's two different sets of rules. Okay, I understand what those rules are. So here's how I follow the rules. No generalization, no stereotypes, no big theories, no causes, no solutions, no apologies. I just do the facts. We don't need complicated theories from people no one's ever heard of before. So our challenge from where we are right now is just use the facts. The facts on crime, the facts on this anecdote on crime, that anecdote on crime. As soon as we start going off into the theories and the explanations, we're in a swamp. We're in a minefield. We never come back. No one can touch us if we stick with the facts. The facts are overwhelming, and they're powerful. Why would we even want to leave them?
A good point, Colin. And with that, I'll draw to my final question. What is next for Colin Flaherty? You keep doing what you're doing. Where do you see yourself going henceforth as you continue to blaze a trail truly with your work in the media? And I hope that it will inspire many, many other journalists to follow in your footsteps. But what's next for you?
Another edition of White Girl Bleed a Lot coming out in October. This one's going to feature QR codes. So while you're reading the paperback, take your smartphone out, scan the code, look at your phone. You'll be looking at the riot that you're reading about. I'll tell you something else that's weird. May I break my own rules here?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I thought critical race theory was some kind of, you know, pointy-headed academic thing that was too stupid for people to believe. I now know it is an industry. I now know that this is the Obama and Holder and others use the lingo of critical race theory all the time. Critical race theory says what racism is permanent and racism is everywhere. Critical race theory is being taught in grade schools all across the country in more than 200 grade schools.
You know,
to me, that's my next book.
My producer just came in my ear and said that you're not breaking your own rule because that, sir, is a fact, and I agree with you.
Hey, can I tell you why I brought it up? Because I'm really eager for stories from from teachers, from parents, from students who have been directly exposed to this. You know, if a teacher stands up during one of these seminars where they point the finger at them and say, listen, the reason that there's a difference between black students and white students is not because of poverty, housing, da 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 da. It's because of you, because of your racism. And if anybody puts their hand up and says, I don't think I'm a racist, their contracts are not renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of examples, but I'm eager to get more from teachers and from parents with direct experience with this.
Well, if anybody has a contribution to send your way with regards to that, how do they get it to you?
Easy to find. Colin, you know, White Grub Lead a Lot, Colin Flaherty. My email and phone number is all over the internet.
All right. Well, with that, Colin, I want to thank you for making yourself available tonight. If there's anything we can do to assist you going forward, be sure to let us know. And we're going to listen to a little Frankie Valli now as we go into this commercial break. Colin, best of luck to you, my friend.
All the best, people. Thanks.
We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Show, call us on James's dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. That was, in fact, the best part of the show. The Colin Flaherty interview, of course, but then also the Frankie, you know, we love that Let's Hang On bump. I mean, come on. Anyway, Colin Flaherty, what a great guy. What a leader.
paying the price. Now, that is an example of a man who does the job that most Americans refuse to do, and that is tell the truth. This is a guy that is just an incredible journalist, and he's talking about one of the most important issues of our time, and he should be saluted for that. It has been a long time coming that we have him on our show, and we hope that will be the first of many appearances to follow. Colin Flaherty of WorldNet Daily, and of course, his book, Listen. I mean, he not only does the good work, he has been justly recognized for it in that his book went all the way to number one on Amazon. Keith, I thought you asked a particularly interesting question of Colin during that segment, and I understand where he's coming from, I mean, to be sure. Just the facts, 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 and he does it better than anyone. But still, your point about political correctness was valid because the state religion of this country, which is political correctness, it's not Christianity anymore. Political correctness is the state religion of this country, and it blocks the truth from being told. I mean, we've seen it in our own work for nearly a decade now. You know, we should be out there. You know, as much media attention as we've gotten, and we've gotten millions and millions of dollars worth for it, and we're very lucky to have broken through that glass ceiling and have become as well-known as we are, whether it's good or bad, in terms of the people who might read these reports about us. We've broken through to an extent, and so we're lucky. But a lot of times the truth obviously is obscured, and inevitably you're going to be shouted down as some ne'er-do-well for reporting the truth as Colin does it. So the facts are important. Political correctness also plays a role in the distortion of those facts.
You're absolutely right. I think that the fact that I think his tactic of just telling the facts, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and then letting people draw their own conclusions is good up to a point. But on the other hand, we need to understand we're involved in spiritual warfare. We are, like Sam Francis said, engaged in not just fighting flesh and blood, but in fighting principalities and powers. That's what we need to understand. We have a whole liberal establishment that's taken over America. It's happened in my lifetime. I'm 62 years old. Pat Buchanan said it best in his book, Death of the West. I think it was the third or fourth chapter of his book called For Who Made Revolution. He said that the counterculture of the 60s has become the establishment of today, and the establishment of the 60s has become the dissident culture of today. And the new establishment is much more repressive than the old establishment ever dreamt of being. They accomplish their repression through a soft tyranny called political correctness. It makes it taboo to talk about the issues that are essential for people to understand if they're going to solve the Gordian knot of what is causing America to decline today. Everybody acknowledges this decline, but very few people can put their finger on the problem and tell you precisely what it is. And the reason they can't is because they are not only discouraged from making those hard inquiries, which will lead them to topics like race or Jewish power and influence, they're absolutely punished for doing it. And people don't want to be punished. You know, this is a much more effective method of thought control, political correctness, that is, than the old harsh totalitarian tactics of Bolshevik Russia, for example, where you get a knock on the door at midnight, you'd be dragged to the basement of the Lubyanka and have a bullet put in the base of your brain. That type of violent suppression engenders an armed response and implacable hatred from people. On the other hand, political correctness is a much more effective way of disarming dissent and getting people to go along with the leftist program. People will accept losing their jobs, losing their careers, losing their prospects a lot more than they will losing their lives in a violent manner. And the left knows this. But on the other hand, they know that in order to avoid those unpleasant consequences, people will toe the line of leftism, that they know that there is taboo territory upon which wise men fear to tread because wise men want to be rich. You know, it reminds me of something that happened to me this week, James, and I'm just going to share this anecdote with the audience. I went into a business and ran into a guy who is very well-to-do now in town, and he went to high school with me. And I asked him how things were going, and he just volunteered that he doesn't have much to do, much social intercourse with the people that we went to high school with, because they're all so conservative, and he's a big liberal. And
he must really love you.
And, well, he doesn't know me, but see, here's what happened. I told him, I said, yeah, that's probably the case because liberals tend to be prosperous and conservatives tend to be poor. And he thought for a second, and it's like it struck him like a thunderbolt. And he said, you know, I really wonder why that is. And I know exactly why that is. The reason that is what it is that people realize that being a conservative truth teller is dangerous to one's economic prospects in life. And most people have been conditioned by a theory called economism to think that the be-all and end-all of human existence is to get wealthy. If you're wealthy, it doesn't matter if you got wealthy by luck or by good fortune or by being in the right place at the right time. You are a genius. And anybody who is not rich is a dummy. There was a license plate back in the 60s that I remember vividly that was very popular in the black community in Memphis. All sorts of black people had it on their front bumper. It had portrayed a hippie with flies buzzing around his head, and he looked like he was on drugs. And it said, if you're so damn smart, why ain't you rich? That's the thought. And see, people want to be rich, and they see being aware of what's happening racially and in terms of Jewish power and influence and bucking liberalism generally as being a very dangerous enterprise, something that is going to hurt their prospects. And young people in particular all want to be rich, and they are not going to do anything that could have some type of negative impact on their ability to get rich. This is what political correctness has wrought in our lives. Basically, because of political correctness, conservatism is a taboo. You can't be a conservative. If you are a conservative, you better hide your light under a bushel because you will be punished for it. And there are all sorts of ways that the establishment does it. They have these groups like Leadership Memphis or Leadership Cucamonga or whatnot. Bridge builders, which are basically vetting organizations, and they look at the rising generation of would-be movers and shakers, and they decide who is the most conservative and who are the most liberal. The most conservative are sent into the outer darkness and never going to be asked to have any position of power or authority. They've outed themselves. On the other hand, if you are identified as one of the biggest liberals, you're going to be approached by people that say, you know, you really need to be on the school board, or you really need to be on the city council. And don't worry your pretty little head about raising money to run a campaign. We got you covered. This is how the left controls things. They control it through political correctness, and they certainly don't want you knowing that white people are being systematically dispossessed from power and authority by the left, and that racial violence perpetrated on white Gentiles by blacks is endemic in America. You know, one of the things that really stuck in my craw was when I realized that there are over 37,000 black-on-white rapes in America each and every year, typically. That's over 100 a day. 36,500 would be 100 a day. So there's more than 100 a day black-on-white rapes. Also, U.S. Justice Department statistics show that white-on-black rapes is probably the rarest of all violent crimes. Almost every year it comes in on the U.S. Justice Department database as less than 10, which means that the actual number could be zero because less than 10 doesn't register on the Justice Department database. Nonetheless, a guy that I used to practice law with, a guy named John Grisham, got his breakthrough into publishing by writing a book called A Time to Kill, about a supposed black-on-white rape. And it says in the flyleaf that this was based on a true story. Well, indeed it was. But they don't tell you that the true story was a black-on-white rape that John Grisham conveniently transformed into a white-on-black rape because he knew that he was playing to a particular audience, the Jews in charge of the publishing industry in New York, and that he was trying to ring their chimes, and apparently he did a pretty good job. Look at the subsequent career he's had. He's like the paperback writer that the Beatles sang about. He's willing to change it round to be a success.
We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back in the third hour, we're going to do what we normally do at the top of the show and go to some listener mail and then a variety of stories. Stay tuned.
Another hour of the Political Cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.